we are live. Wow, that went really quick this time. And we are live. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. Vlogcast that comes from a skeptical point of view to answer some of the questions of why. The Vlogcast started as a combination of spite and the Streisand effect because people on Facebook really need to watch our show and they really don't want to. Part of this is to follow through with the old adage, sometimes the journey is more important than the destination. I'm your main host, unknown to Shujin Tribble, pretty much everywhere. You can find me online under that name, S-H-U-J-I-N. Trust me, if you go looking for that, you will have a hard time missing me. Let me go ahead and introduce you to everybody that we've got over here. Top right-hand corner of the bingo card, just over the border into Canada. Good morning, heretic woman.
Good morning.
Just to the Midwest of the U.S., good evening, Bridget.
Good evening.
And I'm going to have a fun time explaining how this turned out in a second. Joining us from the Naked Mormonism podcast, the head honcho himself, more than half of the podcast hosts, Mr. Bryce Blankenagle.
Thank you for having me, Shujin, and the entire Holy Crap vlog team. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, what there is of it right now. Jeez.
Well, the cool people are here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I told you, everybody learned that Bryce is going to be on. They're like, no, fuck that guy. I'm out.
not even 5 minutes.
By the way, we're not supposed to drop F-bombs in here.
Well, whatever. I just watched 2 episodes of this in the last 3.5, almost 4 hours of my life. I know that word has been dropped a number of times.
Well, yes. I said not supposed to,
Yeah, we're also not supposed to smuggle in tanned leather from Australia, but some of us have managed to do that. Thank you very much.
This is true.
Yeah, granted, that goes back to, the turn of the century, but, what are you going to do? Anyway, so
scratching his head now.
Yeah, well, I it's another time. There's a box back over there that's got tanned leather from Australia. I brought back from when the lady and I went.
Shujin, are you admitting to a crime on live video?
I thought you were talking about Jake. I'm sorry.
No. I have legitimately learned how to do leather crafting. I still want to get back to doing it as like an income. And I still have a thing of 6 ounce veg tan leather over here. And I've also got tanned rawhide in a container out at that way. Am I admitting to importation?
Just say it was Jake, dude.
I can't because he's so young. I don't think he was alive back then. So I can't say anything bad about him because I kind of missed out on his recording session last night. I completely forgot about it. And the little one and I went to watch Thor Ragnarok and I didn't even realize that. Because all of a sudden my phone's beeping like crazy in my pocket, which felt really nice, by the way, Jake, if you know, because I had it on vibrate. But, it was like, what the hell is going on? And I looked and just like, there's messages from Jake. Oh, shit. Oops. I'm sorry. I felt so bad. We'll see what happens.
So I guess calling him tan leather is probably not a good
thing. Not a good thing. No. No.
Okay.
No. But anyway, so let me go ahead and explain a couple of things. First off, of course, if you're watching live, thank you very much. If you want to chime in at any time, feel free over on your side of the screen. I don't remember which side it's on. It doesn't really much matter. Somewhere on your screen, you've got the live chat feature. Go ahead and take advantage of that. Aubrey, I did see over there. And
Zone 2 out.
Yeah, I'm going to guess that's a, I'm just going to remove that, that particular one. Cause, I don't think that really had anything to do with the show because it was making reference to video cards. Nice job there, guy.
Who cares nice about job. Video cards?
Anyway, so, let me give you guys a real quick explanation as to what happened before I get started into the actual, I was in the middle of doing the Friday night radio stream with Joey, who is late at the moment. Dallin couldn't join us because he's in the middle of moving house still. He was expecting to be here. I don't know where he is. Anyway, so as I'm in the middle of it, I get this message popping up over on Facebook. And what do I see? I see, hey, I haven't been on your show in a while. Is there any chance I might be able to show up again? Words to that. I'm highly paraphrasing a little bit. And there it is. It's Bryce. It's like, well, I'm in the middle of doing my show. But you know what? I didn't put out this week's show announcement yet. If you're available even like this weekend straight away, yeah, this could actually work out right. And it's just like, sure, yeah, I can do that. I won't be drunk enough by that point, but sure, yeah, I'll go ahead and I'll do that. So it works out good. So thank you for not being... Oh, you kind of working. All right.
Yeah. Well, see, I had bugged Grace a few weeks ago when we were short some people, and he was busy at that moment and was kind of like, oh, man.
It doesn't surprise me.
If you recall, I went and booked him on my show instead at that point. you should have seen it, Bryce. He was like, is he available? I'm like, well, no, but I booked him for my show tomorrow night. He's like,
yeah. Oh,
and we have a fuzzy pussy here, too.
And, of course, the end of the tale is here I am. You were gracious enough to accept my inviting myself onto your show. So,
and that's perfectly fine. The worst part about it is that I'm going to have to get a fax machine set up so that I can actually sign off on his court order to be on the damn show. So thanks. You're going to cost me an extra $200 in setting up a phone line and everything. Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
Can't most cell phones fax things nowadays?
Details. I can get one at the secondhand store. All I got to do is just set up a VoIP line or something. And I figured out from there.
Anyway. Lovely thermal paper. Love that stuff.
Oh, God, don't get started. My buddy's first computer had thermal paper.
Actually, I'm pretty sure my printer faxes.
That wouldn't surprise. Anyway, we got stuff to do. Not the least of which is we got to try to figure out where the hell everybody else. You know what?
Yeah.
You know what? I don't care. I've said it before. I'll do this show with one person. I'll do it with the full contingent because I'm having fun.
Yeah.
Fuck me in a mouth. Sorry. I'm going to start this. It's Bryce's fault. He dropped the first F-bomb tonight, so it's his fault. I'm blaming you.
Really? It's your show. It's your fault for not corralling me correctly.
Yeah,
you're supposed to be in control, Shijin.
What the actual?
Right? Seriously? You didn't set the rules when we joined up, man. It's on you.
I see how it is. Okay. Okay, so I'm sitting...
You are the main host.
Welcome to My Little Pony, the podcast. Okay, how's that? That's where it's going to be. I've even got music. Okay, how's that? You happy with that? Yeah. I'm a freaking on-air. Well, no, not exactly on-air. I'm a streaming DJ. Leave me alone. Whatever. Anyway, let me get rolling over here because holy balls, this is going to be all kinds of fun tonight for a change. So with 5 minutes of the clock. Your 5 minute freestyle starts right now. I just hope I don't get a DMCA on this one. You know the song. Come on. You're reading it up. You know what the song is. R-E-S-P-E-C-T. No, I spelled it right. Come on. The point of respect is personal. It's something that we should hope to have. And believe it or not, I hold respect as something very valuable to myself. And never mind the old joke about, you know, what's more valuable than gold, but so easily gotten rid of. It's respect. Respect is earned. Respect is not given. Respect is something that grows over time. It's not something that's just suddenly there. Respect can be weaponized if you're not careful. And that's where it gets to be really, really, really scary, because respect can very easily be used to kind of hide little pieces. If you've got enough respect, you can easily have that fall into faith. And as usual, we have to kind of make sure that we understand that we're talking about blind faith, not being willing to, you know, check and see what's really going on. Now, me personally, I try my damnedest to make sure that if I'm respected, it's for good goddamn reason. And vice versa. If I respect somebody, it's probably because of really good reason. I don't like to be fooled. I don't think anybody does. I don't like to be duped. I don't want somebody to, you know, pull a fast one over on me. You know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Fool me once, that's my fault. And I will eat that every day. And I don't like it. I've been fooled. I've been fooled on more than one occasion. Way more than one occasion. I don't like it. Leaves a real bitter taste in my mouth that I taste over and over and over again. Even when I'm not thinking about it, it's there. Because I know full well that I put my faith, I put my trust into someone. Someone that I would have otherwise thought was worthy of being trusted. That kind of respect is not easy to earn from me. If you don't like me, that's okay. If you do like me, that's okay too. But I would much rather, far and away, much rather, be respected for my integrity than to be liked. I would much rather be respected. Now, that sounds stupid. I mean, who doesn't want to be liked? I mean, everybody wants to be liked. Yeah, I get that. I get that. But consider a second. Even if you go to the outlandish idea of science fiction, of superheroes, you always knew where you stood with specific superheroes. Now, granted, they're the archetype, and they're the Mary Sue's of all things good. But if they're true to the character that we expect them to be, you can always respect that you will know where you stand with them. I mean, let's face it. There is an adage that says, "The enemy of my enemy is my friend." No, you're not. You're someone that I have a common cause with. Am I going to respect you? That depends. Why are you having a fight with somebody else? What's your beef back and forth? Once anyone knows, then we can find out whether or not you actually deserve to be respected. And by what I decide to do, determines whether someone can respect me. This is episode 186 on the docket, Your Honor. Get naked for Joseph Smith. Oh, we had a fun time. Last week, we ended up talking with Dave. Excuse me. me. Dave motherfucking Foda. I have to say it that way. It's contractually obligated. And one of the things that ended up coming up was about how if you're going to wear the hat of atheism, if you're going to deal with social issues, make sure that you're wearing the hat for the right reason. There's some things for which the atheism hat doesn't have any real bearing, but people want to try it out anyway. Now, like I was saying, last night, I hadn't yet put out the word as far as to the show, and I was still kind of thinking about doing the show, talking about this particular piece. But the fact that Bryce ended up getting in touch with me and it just clicked for me. Okay, I know some of the stories. I had been hearing some of the stuff that you had done over with Noah Heath, Eli, and Lucinda. So I kind of knew some of the pieces that I wanted to hit on. And it was a great combination of atheism and politics. And that's kind of where we're going to end up, because you know this stuff, and some of this is creepy, scary stuff. So we're going to get to that in just a couple of moments. Just before we get rolling, of course, as always, Heretic Woman, I took a quick look for news on Rafe Badawi. I got nothing showing up, as usual. Nothing for you this week either, right?
No, I have not seen anything.
Which, again, as we keep reminding you, is unfortunately going to be much more the norm than not. So as of the recording of tonight's episode, it is now 5 years, 4 months, 19 days since Raif Badawi was unjustly incarcerated for thought crime. Our hopes and our thoughts are still with you and your family. We're really waiting for you to get home, man. Good luck. So, Bryce, give us a little quick rundown as to what the Naked Mormonism podcast is and which court order you are violating now to be using computer equipment these days.
Well, I've constructed an intricate web of these proxy servers, so they haven't found me yet. So there is no actual court order that I am in violation of at the moment. I do what I call the Serial Mormon History Podcast, because it is church history, Mormon history specifically, I should say, is very confusing and convoluted, and it requires so much a vast understanding of American history in order to get an intellectual grasp on. So I decided to start at the beginning and start with the birth of Joseph Smith and try and escalate things from there chronologically. And since then, I find some incredible things that happen in Joseph's history that have wonderful parallels to our world today. Now, of course, history does not, history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. So we do see these typical patterns that certain people or certain scenarios or certain time frames in history tend to fall into. And we can extrapolate where those patterns lead and see similarities with what's going on in today's politics or today's religion or today's fill in the blank, and, you know, extrapolate what might result from where we currently are in the timeline of these designated patterns that we've arbitrarily picked out. So I've just found a lot of interesting insight in studying Mormon history, because I find vast and incredible parallels to what's going on, not only in today's Mormon church, but in today's church and politics.
Yeah, to go along with that one, let me prime the pump on something. I was about to use a different term, and let me remind folks about a piece that came up because of Scientology back in I forgot what the hell year it was. I should have written it down. I thought that I'd remember. I think it was 58. The Church of Scientology had infiltrated about 1,100 departments and offices of the United States government in order to find all the information that the government had on the Church of Scientology, the legal dirt, shall we say, in an effort to try to find, squash, destroy these records to make sure that the government wasn't able to, well, bring up various charges of various different things. And they were successful.
Operation Snow White, which was actually in the 1970s.
Oh, was this? I completely forgot what year it was.
That's okay. It says Operation Snow White was a criminal conspiracy by the Church of Scientology during the 1970s to purge unfavorable records about Scientology and its founder, L. Ron Hubbard. The project included a series of infiltrations into and thefts from 136 government agencies, foreign embassies, and consulates, as well as private organizations critical of Scientology, carried out by church members in more than 30 countries. 1930s. It was one of the largest infiltrations of the United States government in history, with up to 5,000 covert agents. The operation also exposed the Scientology plot, quote, Operation Freakout, because Operation Snow White was the case that initiated the U.S. government investigation of the church. And famously, L. Ron Hubbard's wife was convicted under that investigation, and she did jail time. He fled in one of his boats and sat in the ocean in international territory for years and years to avoid prosecution.
Now that we've got that one out of the picture, because that was the, like I said, I thought it was the late 50s, early 70s.
Scientology was only formed in like the early 50s. So he didn't have the numbers to facilitate something like that at that period.
Okay. See bits and pieces. Now, I wanted to bring that one up to make sure that we understood that what we're going to end up talking about, like Bryce said, is not a repeat, it's rhyme. So Bryce, let's go back to a piece that you ended up talking to the guys over at Scathing Atheist about. And I've kind of been putting little bits and pieces for folks that once upon a time, Joseph Smith and company could have, theoretically, and in all practicality, could have and might have been successful with overthrowing the United States government, if I remember the way that you worded it.
So there are so many moving pieces to this. When I said that, I was woefully ignorant of just how capable Joseph Smith was of orchestrating some kind of mass overthrow. What I have come to understand now in researching much of Nauvoo history, because the church moved, it began out in New York, then it moved down to Ohio, then down to Missouri, and then they were exiled out of Missouri after the Mormon extermination order, and then moved to Illinois and Iowa. Joseph's theocracy, that's where he built the quintessential Mormon establishment. That was his place, his kingdom, basically. And at the time, they wrote into the Nauvoo Charter that they could commission a specific legion, what was known as the Nauvoo Legion, that was just an army specific to Nauvoo. And which was weird, because most militias back then were controlled by the governors. So this was an aberration, because people were surprised to see that a city had its own army, basically. And when it was initially founded, Joseph started it out as a voluntary militia. That the recruit numbers must not have been high enough, he made it mandatory service for all men 18 to 45 years old that they had to serve. And at the time, this was in early 1841, there were anywhere from about 10 to 15,000 Mormons there. So that meant that there were about 3 to 4,000 at Nauvoo's height, 3 to 4,000 armed men in the Nauvoo Legion that were ready to march to the beat of Joseph Smith's drum. Now, that actually represents the largest state militia that had ever been formed. That was the largest on-call Minuteman militia in American history at the time, and it was not bigger, but it rivaled what the United States government was able to gather together.
Okay, Bryce.
But yeah,
sorry, just one quick question to give everybody a little bit better timetable as to when we're talking. Roughly, when are we talking about at this point? 18.
This is 44 was when Joseph Smith was assassinated, 1844.
Okay.
Started the church in 1830. So he had a 14-year time span where he was running around doing his Joseph Smith thing. So one of the main issues with how small the federal government was back then was that the federal government couldn't call together militias from multiple different states. So that's why the United States government actually didn't have its own legitimate proprietary armed forces. They just relied on the states calling together the state militias. So that's why Joseph Smith, with his Nauvoo Legion, had an army that rivaled the size of any army that the United States government could gather at any given time. But Joseph also had some grand plans. He had some grand designs. There were rumors flying around that he wanted to take 100,000 troops, American soldiers, out to Oregon and liberate all of the territory all along the way up to Oregon. When I say liberate, I mean kill all of the Native Americans. He wanted to be the guy that spearheaded that. And I think he had planned on setting up Mormon establishments all along the way, which means that basically everything west of the hemisphere, west of the Mississippi, had he succeeded, would all be Mormon, the United States of Mormonism, basically. So Joseph had some grand designs. He had some grand plans, but he didn't actually have any way of these plans. He just had the numbers on his side. So I think Joseph's fatal flaw was he was poor at executing a lot of things.
Now, to make sure that we're on the understanding of all this, like I had said earlier, you know, Operation Snow White took 20 years, and the number of militia that Joseph Smith was able to get going was 20 years. Yeah, less than, but still, it's amazing what you can do when you've got a little bit of time and a lot of charisma on your side to get people mm-hmm. to help back you. And well, time is one of those amazing things. When you got enough of it, it's amazing what you can do. Speaking of time, by the way, Joseph, I should say Joey, thanks for making it, man. I hope you're doing okay this morning.
I see we're trying to split hairs now.
Yeah, well, every once in a while I kind of forget who's who.
Well, I try every now and then, but
aforementioned Joseph will be here soon.
Will he now?
Yes, he has to go make his cafeve first.
He or I want to pacify Oregon. I mean, what's the point? What do they have up there?
Well,
what do they is Oregon famous for?
Oregon, for one thing, is famous for Manifest Destiny. We had to go because that's what we were there for.
No offense to any Oregoners out there, but I've never been.
Oregonites? Oregon? Whatever. Doesn't rhyme with anything anyway.
Oregons? Oregons?
I don't know.
All I could say is I've never been further west than the Mississippi. So St. Louis, in fact.
Could do a lot worse.
Yeah.
St. Louis Botanical Gardens. That's the furthest west in the U.S. I've been.
I think the furthest west I've been is Japan.
That's
not the direction that I was going. I went west to get east. It works that way on a ball. Anyway. So here we go. We've got 20 years of the formation of the Mormon religion here in New York. Sorry. So they've been steadily booted out further and further and further west. And like you said, Bryce, there were a number of times where at least one where there was practically an extermination order on the order, so to speak. That had to have tainted the way that the Joseph Smith and company must have felt for, you know, the rest of society that basically just said, you know, GTFO and keep moving because we don't want you here.
Mm-hmm. Well, the extermination order that you're talking about specifically, that came out of Missouri. The Mormons were able to live, Joseph Smith was able to live in Missouri for less than a year. But what had caused this to happen was he was chased out of Kirtland, where the church was headquartered, and he was forced out of there violently by the Mormons, who were wronged because Joseph had created a fake company that was masquerading as a bank, was printing his own banknotes. So he had screwed over so many people, they kicked him out of Kirtland, and he was forced to go settle in Missouri. The majority of the Mormons went out and settled in Missouri. They spent less than a year there before there was what was known as the Missouri Mormon War of 1838, and that all came to a head in late October of 1838, and there was what was known as the Hans Mill Massacre, and the Mormons were surrounded by about 2,500 to 3,000 Missouri troops at their twin cities, Adam-on-Diamond and Far West. And that's when Joseph Smith was surrendered his towns and was taken to jail, from which he summarily escaped.
Which, by the way, if you have not heard that story told, oh, it's a wonderful story that you should hear him tell. if I remember right, you told that, I think that was on Scathing Atheists that you'd done some months ago. And I have to admit, I was very riveted in listening to this Bond-esque backstabbing, cold-blooded murder kind of thing. And well done, man.
Yeah. Well, the thing is there are so many, obviously, there are so many factors that go into a war of any sort. And it took me 10 full history episodes to get through that 1 year. And each of those history episodes is anywhere from an hour and a half to 3 hours. Just because there's so much to talk about, and that's 1 year of time. It's just absolutely jam packed. But yeah, so that is when the Mormons were exiled to Illinois, and that's when they were given license to kind of do Illinois. But finally, they got chased out of Illinois after they weren't paying any of their bills, and that's when Brigham Young moved out to Utah. And that's when things got really heinous and evil and completely unchecked by the U.S. government. And into the fact that they were a little busy with the Civil War as Brigham Young was at the height of building his theocracy. And you imagine if L. Ron Hubbard would have been able to go exile himself and his followers to like a small island or something that has there's no place that I can think of that would be a perfect analog of this, but a place that has a bunch of Native Americans you can enslave and nobody there to check your power. Who knows what L. Ron Hubbard would have done, right?
Well, let's say if it was like a U.S. territory, or like say the Yukon before, or Yukon, what's that? Alaska. So say like Alaska was like by itself, and you know, they went up there and just did their thing, and Utah wasn't even a territory at that point, was it? It was just kind of its own hunk of land, or
no? Well, it was when the Mormons, from my understanding, I could be wrong with this, but I understand it, when Mormons moved out there, that's when they kind of declared it as Utah territory. Prior to that, it was all just part of I think Texas, or not Texas, sorry, Mexico. But one thing that was unique about Utah was it was a trading route for people headed out to California. So they had this constant influx of people that were traveling across the plains and coming through Utah all the way from north end to the very south end and trading all along the way, bringing goods in, giving their money to the Mormons. The Mormons were giving them goods. And, they had a constant influx of resources coming in. So you think about somebody trying to settle in Alaska. There's nothing up there to trade with. There's nobody up there except some First Nationers. But other than that, you don't have, massive trade routes going through Alaska. So Utah was kind of lucky in this way. They were a central place in this vast desert that had some freshwater and settlements, had all of these factors that made Utah what it could be so that the Mormons could flourish.
Okay. We've got a couple of things. I've got a question over on the live chat I'm going to get to in just a second. But Joey, just before I got you, Unrenowned Tech, did finally just join us. So
hi, guys.
Welcome. Glad you were able to make it.
Thank you.
Okay. Joey, your question was?
This business with Oregon, you said that this took place in the 1830s, correct?
40s.
Okay, 40s. Well, still. Heretic Woman?
Yes.
For another, 20 years, I don't think the Tsarina would have allowed the Mormons to do a damn thing up in Alaska.
Ah, very true. I was just saying, comparison-wise.
That was the last time we were able to walk to Russia.
This is true.
Well, hey, look at the bright side. At least we can do it out the back door these days. How's that?
You can see it from her house.
Somebody's house, anyway. So the question that came up over on the live chat, Zone 2 out. I told you. I got to your question. Had said, didn't Joseph want to recruit the natives into his militia to overthrow the government? Now, I'm kind of wondering if that kind of came a little bit later, or this is a piece that I'm not specifically familiar with.
That's a really good question. And unfortunately, we don't know the inner workings of Joseph Smith's mind. We can only try and infer what his plans were based on his actions. The Book of Mormon, the preface of it, the title page of it says that this is written for the Lamanites, for the Native Americans, as the Mormons call them, the Lamanites, in order to bring them to a knowledge of Jesus, of the Savior Christ. Well, this was not new at the time. People were proselyting to the First Nationers as much as they possibly could, but there were these agencies that were run by the American government, and the pastors and ministers who wanted to proselyte to the natives had to apply to these agencies in order to get permits to go proselyte in these First Nation lands. So Joseph Smith, the early Mormons, Oliver Cowdery and Parley P. Pratt and a few others petitioned General Lewis, and this is the same Lewis of the Lewis and Clark expedition. Clark. They petitioned General Clark to get these permits to go proselyte to the Native Americans, and that's when the first mission troop made their way out there. They were denied the permits and thrown off of the land, unfortunately. But this does open up an interesting possibility. Joseph wrote the Book of Mormon of Americans. And I think at some point he may have had some kind of grand design where he would write this book, the Native Americans would read this book, they would come to Jesus, they would follow Joseph Smith, then he could use them as an army to overthrow the government. However, I don't think there is any actual historical record, any account that we can look to that Joseph Smith ever articulated that plan specifically. I'm just inferring that based on my own assumptions.
Well, I don't know how the Book of Mormon would be that appealing to Native Americans when the whole premise of the book is your people are dark because you're evil and nasty.
But if they converted to Book of Mormonism, then they'd turn they white and they'd be indistinguishable.
White and delightsome, yes.
Cultural appropriation at its finest.
Yes. Yeah. I still love the accounts you told me about. Is it general authorities or prophets back in the day who were like, this native family converted and now look, aren't they lighter looking?
When you say back in the days, that's 1960s.
I know. That's before my time.
That's not even, I'm saying that's not even like something, a holdover from Brigham Young in the 1870s or 80s or something like that. No, that is from this most recent century that we just crested over. That is that is way more recent than it should be.
I have told that to Mormons that I have met. I said, it's really interesting how you guys have just started to acknowledge that black people are not black because they're sinners. They're black because they happen to be black. And they tell me, oh, that's not true. We always thought that. Really? Haven't read your own damn book.
Well, let's be fair about something. We can nitpick pretty much any person of any religion and point out your religion says this really nasty thing, and they will go ahead and they will say, nope, Catholics, As an ex-Catholic myself, RC now stands for Recovering Catholic. Thank you. It's kind of like alcoholism. You never quite get that whole stand up, kneel, stand up, sit thing out of your...
Or the guilt stuff, I'm sure, is kind of...
Well, there's a lot less guilt these days. But the point is...
I have to say, that is the one of the few things that I can contribute to my atheism. When I was little, and I asked questions of my parents about things I read in the Bible, they were honest. That's my good. Dad never lied about the Bible. He said it's got war, it's got death, it's got murder, slavery, torture, rape, love, caring. It has every single possible good, bad thing that you can think of. It is not a happy, feel-good book.
No. Mm-hmm. And
my parents never lied about that. And I think that's part of the reason why I ultimately ended up shifting to atheism. That and reasoning, of course. But
yeah. Now, as a recovering Catholic, I can get away with saying the nasty stuff from the Bible, especially the Old Testament stuff, because that's where the vast majority of it is.
That was biblical.
Oh, well, quite literally. But if you had told me that there were sexual references to
donkeys,
donkeys and horses, if you had told me that there were a talking donkey, if you had tried to remind me about things about killing children who didn't want to listen to their parents by death. I mean, killing by death, that just makes sense.
I actually stumbled across the story about the bears.
Oh, yeah. That's what happened. Kids, don't piss off people who are bald. Because even if there are not bears, chances are in this day and age, they've probably got a gun. Don't do that. But that's here in America. I mean, like I said, if we're going to call a spade, so to speak, if you had told me about these things in the book, the Ezekiel quotes, I would never have believed you.
And Ezekiel 23, the whole chapter is pretty.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, 20 is the best.
Now, I didn't know. And it's entirely possible that a good majority of the Mormons these days probably just are.
Well, I think it's actually worse in Mormonism because they deliberately don't teach a lot of the more questionable things. In fact, they don't even teach a lot of the deeper theology, right, Bryce? It's milk before meat, as they say.
Yeah. Well, one thing that's interesting is where the church focuses on the Book of Mormon, because the Bible is, you know, over 1,000 pages, and most Christians don't read their Bible. However, the Book of Mormon, it's a novel. It's you know, 500 pages. You can get through it pretty quick.
Okay, wait a minute.
Graphic for you.
Oh, do you know?
Yeah. So this is a Marriott special. That I pulled some time ago.
Is this the one that's autographed by the author, or did you get one of the cheap-ass ones?
That would be this one is autographed by the Bryce himself, actually.
Oh, Bryce, it's very good of you to go ahead and deface a piece of whatever. Anyway, going on. Anyway, so your point is
it's also signed by David Michael himself, but that's, yeah, you know. That's but this sure. This is my Marriott special. Oh, and you've got the spiffy version there.
My Book of Mormon's way bigger than yours.
That's okay. I guarantee you my Quran's bigger than yours. But anyway,
I was going to get a Book of Mormon, but then I found out that they follow you around if you accept it from one of them.
That's why I pilfered one from a Marriott, because but anyway, so those of you who have video, if you can see that, where that bookmark is, that's actually the entire Book of Mormon. The rest is like indexes and stuff.
Holy crap.
So literally. That's it.
Jesus. Yep.
That's all there is to it.
That's
and that's like really, that's pretty fine print, mind.
Yeah, it's typical biblical print.
Yeah. But I mean, The point, though, is that most Mormons have read their Book of Mormon. So, and some of them have read it many, many times through. So they don't have a way of saying, well, you know, I didn't read that in the Book of Mormon, but they do have ways of focusing on specific points in stories. So when we talk about the Jaredites building wooden submarines with a hole in the top, in the bottom, for when they run out of air, and it took them over a year to cross the Atlantic Ocean with the wind blowing them in these little fucking wooden submarines that are not watertight, with animals and shit rolling around in there. I mean,
don't forget the magic rock lights. Those are my favorite.
I'm getting to it. Okay. So they don't focus on the plausibility of this. That's just granted that we don't talk about that. What they do talk about is the brother of Jared taking these 12 magic stones up to the mountain and praying to God, saying, Lord, if we are in these submarines, we are not going to have light. And then the hand of God, the literal hand of God, reaches down from the heavens and touches the rocks and lights them up for him, and they turn them into these like eternal LED Coleman lanterns. And and of course the brother Jared is so surprised he falls back. What is this? Because it's the finger of God touching these stones, and God looks at him. He's like, why are you scared? And he's like, I didn't expect to see the hand of God. And then God shows himself to the brother of Jared, and they focus on this aspect of the story and say, look at his faith. He prayed to God. He knew that God would have a solution. He did his part. He did his effort in bringing the stones to the Lord and asking him to do something specifically. So the Lord was able to help him the rest of the way. And they focus on that. They don't talk about the fact that wooden submarines existed in 3000 BC. Because
that had a hole in the top and the bottom, but didn't sink or drown anybody or...
Yeah, actually, all right, exactly. Hold on a second, because there's three things about this. Are we talking about the first incarnation of Monty Python's Flying Circus with the hand literally coming out of the sky? And because I don't think that they've had 2D animation at that point. I'm trying to...
No, they didn't.
Over here. Okay, two, glowy rocks. So this is the first incarnation of kryptonite is what you're saying, I'm guessing.
Sounds like it.
Yeah, maybe Joseph Smith discovered radium, or sorry, brother of Jared discovered radium or something.
Oh, and did you notice the brother of Jared actually has no name, which I found hilarious as well.
That came at a later time. Do you know his name, Dev?
Oh, I did. I don't remember. Does it start with an A? Or am I?
No, it starts with an M.
M. Shit. Mickey Mouse? Remember.
What?
Well, with the way that everything goes, I'm expecting it's some variation on moron. I could be wrong.
It is
Moroni. Yep. Moroni something. Mormon. Is it Mormon?
It is. You just have to wait. It is Mohanrai Moriankumar.
Oh God.
Wow. All
right. Okay. So it's like nine Book of Mormon names smashed together in a blender. It's amazing.
Didn't David end up calling him Eminem?
I think he did. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. That's why I didn't remember, because he said it once. It was like, screw that. It's Eminem from now on.
Eminem? Mighty Mouse?
Close enough. A couple really quicklies. From Paris, good morning, Joseph. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
Hola.
Bonjour to le monde. Oh, wait, that's Spanish.
And from over on the live chat, some side or other, a couple of pieces that have come up. Stephanie, hi. Thank you. I didn't read what you were saying or the rest of what's going on, but Zone had also put something else over here. And I'm trying to parse it myself while listening and paying attention to everything. So it's not jogging quite in, over my head. So here it is from Zone. Quote, so... if Joseph wanted to slay a lot of the natives, but may not really wanted to recruit them, is that what Brigham also wanted when he wanted to target the, quote, Gentiles for letting Joseph getting murdered? Like I said, I'm quoting it directly. I'm trying to exactly parse it out. I'm not exactly sure how this is coming out, because it's not running through my head quite correctly. And I'm wondering if that is working properly out on this one for you guys.
Yeah. So what happened when Joseph and Hiram were shot in Carthage? This turned into the rally cry for Brigham Young. So there was a schism crisis after this happened because Joseph didn't lay out any legitimate terms for who would be rightful successor. So Brigham Young was the president of the Quorum of the 12 Apostles. And after a lot of infighting, after possibly poisoning Joseph Smith's, one of Joseph Smith's two surviving brothers, who would have been the next one in the line, poisoning him less than a month after Joseph and Hiram were assassinated, Brigham Young ended up taking the torch, and he took about half of the Mormons out to Utah with him. So to try and answer that, Brigham Young, in order to answer the deaths of Hiram and Joseph, he created what was known as the Blood Atonement, where it was this doctrine taught even in the temples, in the temple rituals that Mormons practiced up until 1991, that they would avenge the blood of the prophets on his enemies up until the third and fourth generation. And the Mormons figured that, hey, it's the 1990s, at least four generations have passed since Joseph Smith died, so we can let that part of the temple ceremony go. But it did involve neck splitting and these Masonic symbols and ripping your gut open, saying that if you break the oath of the blood of the prophets, or if you reveal what you have performed in the temple today, you will sacrificed yourself by cutting your own throat. So this was what was known as Blood Atonement, and I recommend people listening or watching go look at Blood Atonement, because this was this is what I call Brigham Young blood. Brigham Young in my show, very vengeful and artistic type of mob.
Sounds like an anti-virgin theme.
What? Sorry, I didn't hear that.
I said it sounds like a deflowering scene. Blood 'em young.
If the natives were the virgins, then yes, absolutely. Yeah. But Joseph was able to appropriate that blood of the prophets doctrine to pretty much whoever wronged the Mormons. It was the United States government at some point. It was the Baker Fancher party who were the victims of the Meadows Massacre. It was a number of people. And when the Mormons in Utah to go do a mission, he would say to do it because this is that we are avenging the blood of the prophets. So when Zone Out says, is that what Brigham also wanted when he wanted to target the Gentiles for letting Joseph getting murdered? Basically, the Gentiles and the people who quote unquote murdered Joseph were whoever Brigham Young wanted them to be. And it caused the Mormons to do some really evil and heinous shit.
Well, and the Blood Atonement was also part of the doctrine that said, like, if you've really screwed up and you need to, if you're trying to get right with God, you can kind of do that by shedding your own blood, which is why to this day, death by firing squad is an option if you've been sentenced to death in Utah.
Wasn't aware of that fun little tidbit, but not surprising.
Yes, it is.
So, that's all part of Blood Atonement is, you know, Jesus dying on the cross, his grace isn't quite good enough. There are some sins that are so horrible that you actually have to shed your blood in order to atone for them.
And so would you say, Bryce, that if they were doing that to someone else, they would have had the idea that they're doing them a favor as well?
Yeah. I mean, they're sending him to judgment. They're sending him to go meet with Joseph and talk to him about what they did to him. So, yeah, absolutely.
Kind of like, you know, the idea of burning a witch was the nice thing to do because fire purifies your sin.
Yeah. Fun fact, Joseph's great-grandfather, participated in the Salem witch trials.
Oh, what was his name? Wasn't Smith, was it?
It was Jonathan. I think it was Jonathan that was the father of Asel Smith.
So it was a Smith. Okay.
Yeah, they could have just expedited the whole thing with a dagger up the sternum.
Yeah, but then what's the fun in that? There's no fun in that. I mean, you have to have it all public and everything so everybody can see and hear.
You can dagger up the sternum in the public.
Yes, but then you don't get the all screamy and everybody getting to see the spectacle of it all and starting the everybody being able to know, hey, this is what could happen to you. Oh, wait, I didn't get straight A's this season? Maybe I should. Anyway, not that I'm saying that the Salem witch trials were ever bogus. I mean, that would be wrong. So, Bridget, by the way, I saw that you brought yourself off of mute. Was there something that you wanted to drop in here? I thought that you did.
No, it's just I'm having random household noises, so I've been muting off and on as, like, people are moving about.
Okay. So let's kind of, now that we've got pieces of this put together, let's deal with how this religion, one of the newest of religions, because it may be an offshoot of Judaism/Christianity, but it is its own group. I mean, they've got their own tax ID number and all. They literally had, well, a theocracy inside of the United States. It may have been a small area at first, a city, but it has effectively become the de facto of the state out there, or more than one state, no?
I called it a cult.
Yeah. A cult is one way to say it. And yep. there's so much that's rooted in Mormon culture in general, that it kind of serves to be the cult kind of serves as the root word of culture in that aspect. But yeah, I refer to it as Morador. The ex-Mormon subreddit refers to it as Mormon Corridor Morador, because that's just basically Canada to Mexico, and you know, the outskirts of Nevada to the outskirts of Colorado. That's kind of the corridor where Mormons settled. And really, if the Mormons hadn't settled there, some group would have, but yeah. American history would have been vastly different.
They call it the Morador now.
There'd be less dentists.
Yeah, and engineers. Yep.
By the way, so according to what I found, it was a fellow by the name of Samuel Smith, who was Joseph's great-grandfather, and John Gould, Samuel's father-in-law. So
all runs in the family, huh?
Yep. They, according to this, the two men testified against two innocent women in the infamous Salem witch trials. Both of their testimonies helped lead to the executions of both women, a Mary Easty and a Sarah Wilds.
Wow. Interesting. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Thanks for looking that up. That's no, that's really fascinating.
Yeah. So yep. Samuel Smith.
Yeah. Heretic Woman, make sure that you... Yeah, make sure that you drop the link for that information over to Bryce, just in case. Bryce, it's no offense to you. You've done okay. For those of you that don't know, the level
he's like the researcher from.
Oh God,
like, yeah,
yeah. The amount of work that Bryce has put into his research, not just in trying to look up information in books long since almost defunct, but actually traveling all over in order to find pieces of information. And in some cases, scaring people with, yeah, he does kind of know about this, doesn't he? Yes, I've heard these stories that you've recounted. The fact that there would be something that would swing past his radar is, well, truth be told, surprising in the least. You are one of those people. Hold on. The fact that anything at this point would slip past you is almost mind-boggling to me. To say that it would be a surprise is wouldn't do it justice. You are one of those people for whom, if there was a PhD in research, you would have it, I would think, with how much that you've invested in all of this.
I should think so.
Okay.
Let me ask you something, Bryce.
Bridget, please give me just a second to debunk everything that Shujin just said?
No, and,
and then I'll allow you to ask. I don't want to step on your toes, but there, I have to
blowing smoke up one's right nose, and then there's sucking their genitals.
And both of them were happening at once. Wow.
I wasn't going to go there, but you did apparently. So, you know.
Well, that's one way to get him to come back on the show.
That's kind of what I was going to do. All right, so
I think we have to up the rating now.
I think so. Yeah.
No. Well, okay. Actually, yeah, because he dropped 2 F bombs already, so it's fine. It's fine.
So this is legit TV. The FCC is getting their troops together. Okay. So
fellas at the freaking FCC.
The thing is.
Go on.
Okay. So anyway, yes. FCC sucks. Anyway. So there are the field of Mormon history is incredibly vast. And before I went to MythCon, I went to the John Whitmer Historical Association conference, which was filled with historians who have been studying this their whole life. A sea of white hair at every one of these congregations, people in their 60s, 70s, and 80s who have been studying this for most of their lives, and they have degrees in all of these aspects of Mormon history. I was a child there. I so much about Mormon history that I do not know, and there is so much that I will never know, in spite of how much I spend researching this. I mean, I if I could pick up my camera and pan around and show you all the books that I have here, all these Mormon books, I've barely scratched the surface of Mormonism when it comes to the history of it. And I can study it for my entire life, and I still won't know everything. I can become an expert on just the Nauvoo period or an expert on just the Kirtland period, whatever. There's still so much that I will never know of Mormon history. It just so happens that I find it fascinating and that I travel and I do these things. I read these books because I find it fascinating, and I share what I find fascinating. And I only share a tiny fraction of the percentage of information I consume for this, but it's so vast. So shoot. Never ever be surprised if history slips past me, because there's way more that has slipped past me than hasn't slipped past me. I am a net. I have a bunch of holes that just keeps flying through all these holes. I can only catch a few things here and there.
No, you're a colander, my friend.
Oh, hail his noodly appendages. Okay, with that said, Bridget, please ask your question. I'm sorry to cut you off.
I was just going to ask, because I'm not real familiar with your background. Are you a former LDS yourself?
Yeah, born and raised in Utah. So there's a stigma that follows Utah Mormons specifically, but yeah.
Okay, just curious.
Oh, so this is all spite for you. That's what you're saying.
I'm sure that's what a few more probably say. You're just angry.
What can
Bryce.
I say? Somebody made me angry. I had a bad experience. Yep, my bishop pissed
somebody
me off.
Somebody was mean to you at the church. Yep.
Me wrong. Yep, that's what happens. Yep.
Yes, that's right. Just show us on the can exactly where his noodly appendage told whatever it's in there. Drinking that. But
I guess I do have one more question. Is the culture any different in Utah than it is in Idaho, or are they about the same?
Yes, it is. So you can tell a lot about a Mormon knowing where they came from. Like California Mormons, those are like the liberal, cool Mormons. Utah Mormons, depending on where in Utah you come from, you have a certain stigma attached. Idaho Mormons are the country bumpkin fundamentalists, not the polygamy fundamentalists, but like the Orthodox Mormons. So yeah, if you're up in Rexburg, if you're up in Pocatello, Mormon, grew up there, yeah, you have a certain stank on you as well.
I'm sorry, I'm dying. I'm trying really hard not to laugh in my microphone, because now I've got a combination of a Hasidic Mormon with the ringtails going down the side. I don't know what to do with that.
It is magic underwear.
He's got like a box.
Oh God!
Wait, do Mormons have the equivalent of a Talmud?
Like a Mormon?
Yeah, I guess.
Or the quad? Maybe the quad would be more. Mm. That
like all of their canon, the whole quad has all four books.
Yeah.
Oh God. Let's not talk about. By okay. The way, okay.
If you ever come across one of those cheap, I'd love to have one.
The quads.
Yeah. I don't know where, like, can you buy one of those out of outside of Deseret Books?
Yeah, you can. If you're ever in or around Utah, question mark, they have these, the church runs their thrift store that's known as Deseret Industries. You can pick them up for pennies there. They are all over. You'll find ones that are like marked up and stuff, and people have written on too, if you want that sentimentality.
I have a feeling that by the time I'm ever in a position to go to Utah, they probably will have found out about me and forbidden me from going there, but you never know.
They didn't stop the Gamcast guys, so
I don't know. That's true. Okay, yeah. There's hope then.
Yeah, which
lenient apparently.
Yeah, which brings me up another question. Did Eli lick you because you had that whole going to Utah question mark? I'm kind of feeling that maybe you rubbed off on you a little bit. I mean, not
more
in a sexual
than that
way,
rubbed just, off. I know that story.
Oh, they have legal representation. We don't. We're going to move on from there. So, without getting into bodily fluids,
Grace might be the one who needed the legal representation.
We're not going to do that.
Call Andrew. I need him.
You've been on. Actually, you've been on the same number of times as he has now. So,
yeah.
Sorry, hit my microphone. Okay, so we've got the Mormons. They went ahead, they set up camp and turned it into a city, which has kind of turned into a state, which has kind of turned into the de facto culture of several states at this point. And they have the ability of pretty much writing the rules because, well, you know, as the Golden Rule states, them's it's got the gold. Makes the rules.
Yeah.
They've got a lot of gold. Figuratively speaking, they've got a lot of money that rolls in for them.
Yeah. So a book that recently came out is D. Michael Quinn's book. He's published these three books. This is the third that came out in this series, the Mormon Hierarchy series. And this third book that just came out is Wealth and Power, which he just goes through the entire history of the church's finances. And the book is it's three chapters long, but it is over 800 pages because it has 21 appendices, tables, graphs, ledger books, all kinds of stuff. It's an incredible tome. I have yet to pick up my paper and read it. But thing is, he actually estimated the church's income in tithing in 2010 at $33 billion. Now, there was, I have to qualify this. I said that I think it's woefully inaccurate. There was a Bloomberg article that was published in 2013 that estimated the church's income at $7 billion in tithing. That's closer to accurate, but they also had an estimate of the church's assets, which are, you know, nothing like their straight up tax free income from the tithing. Their assets, the Bloomberg article estimated, this is back in 2013, were anywhere from $30 to $50 billion in just land holdings and businesses. And I mean, they are stupid powerful. They are rolling in so much goddamn. It's crazy. They spent,
what was it? $5 billion with a B dollars on a shopping mall in Utah.
Yeah, they actually only put up about $1.5 billion. The taxpayers picked up the rest of the other $2.5 billion, basically.
Wasn't that lovely? And it has like a retractable roof and shit, right?
Cool as hell. I mean, it's got like an oasis spring running through it, like a little creek and everything. It's City Creek Center. So to talk on your point, Shujin, the thing is that Utah was established as the Mormon theocracy. That's where Brigham Young built his government system, and he ran everything out there. And Brigham Young was a really good businessman, and the culture that has evolved out of that is still a theocracy. There is no. The church and state in Utah are so tightly interwoven and inextricably tied to each other that you would be at pains to take any legal action to try and separate them, because I mean, up until very recently, basically every judge, every police officer, every civil authority, they're all Mormons, and they all view the law through the Mormon lens, and you can't stop them from doing that. So I'm just saying, I mean, you think Christianity has a hold on government. When you look at just the microcosm of Utah, you really see how that can play itself out if it's given 140 years to mature.
Well, and okay. And case in point of that, back when California was they had Proposition 8 to ban gay marriage. A lot of people felt that because the Mormon church actually really pushed for Mormons to vote against that, or to vote for the banning of it, I mean. And I read a lot of people felt that it was the Mormon vote that helped push that over the edge to make it law before your federal law struck it down.
As well as the $60 million that they pumped into lobbying, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Can't imagine. You know, once you've got a whole bunch of money to try to influence how people think about stuff, it's just a matter of knowing how to tweak how people think about something in order to change their vote and flip it.
This is one of the reasons why I want to get off this planet and go into outer space.
I really don't recommend that tech. As the Klingons will remind you, it is cold. No, that was Khan. I'm sorry. Never mind. Yeah. That was not a prosthetic on his chest, by the way. It was not a prosthetic. That's fake. What, steroid use? Sure, whatever. Anyway, it's 40 years past the making. Whatever.
I was going to say it was the 70s. It could have been just about anything.
Actually,
space is a dish best served cold.
Yeah.
And so is Dippin' Dots, but that's a whole other thing for another day.
Oh, I love me some Dippin'
but,
Dots.
But the scary thing about California is, well, it was California. That's not even, it's considered to be a pretty liberal state, and it's by no means a Mormon stronghold, and they were still able to do that. Yes, Bryce?
Well, I would add the scariest part about Proposition 8 and that all coming to a head was that was the back of the mask of the church operating in government affairs when it comes to gay marriage laws. Mm-hmm. So, Prop 8 got so much traction and publicity because it was California. There's a very low Mormon population there. The Mormons spent a shitload of money to get that thing passed. I mean, it was a confluence number of socially active issues that people paid attention to. But that says nothing of the 30 other states that the church has pumped money into to keep gay marriage off of the records and to keep it, outlawed, basically. So, before the Obergefell decision, I mean, the Mormons had pumped a ton of money into other states other than California in order to strike down gay marriage out there. So Prop 8 was this big, big PR shitstorm for the church. Turns out that was one of many, many, many lobbying efforts that the church had put forward, and we just saw it because it was the most widely publicized. The vast majority of the other ones people don't talk about because people aren't aware.
Yeah, Zone, I'm gonna get to your question in just a second. But there's a piece that I want to kind of make sure that I've got a, what's the expression, put a bow on for a second. Bryce, you're saying that the Mormon Church pumped a shitload of money into a number of states on social issues / legal ramifications. I'm probably not saying this quite right.
Governmental.
Well, yes.
Legislative.
Yes. So here's the question. We know that the Mormon Church has done it. We know full well the Roman Catholic Church has done it on many occasions.
We'll even admit to it.
Yeah. And I have to believe that there are a number of other smaller and sometimes unaffiliated churches that have also done similar things. Here's my question, my point. Could this be seen as the reason why groups like the ACLU and the FFRF go to battle in these areas with the minuscule, by comparison, amount of monies that they've got in order to counter these millions and billions of dollars that are trying to be put into crap legislation pushing.
Yeah, I mean, I commend the efforts of the FFRF. That's why I'm a dues-paying member of it. I don't contribute to the ACLU because I don't have enough money to contribute to both them and the FFRF. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, like, they're these little, you know, Davids trying to swing at Goliaths like the church that, you know, has millions and tens of millions of dollars that they can throw at these single cases. Whereas, I mean, the ACLU and FFRF, they have a few lawyers. You know, maybe a few thousand dollars that they can throw at issues like this. They don't have any of the line item budget items that the church has. I mean, there was recently, so I do a segment on my show called Mormon Leaks Minute, right, who created Mormon Leaks, which is this basically an outlet for Mormons to leak information that they have about the church. And out of this Mormon Leaks came a budget committee meeting about the church's building, or the church building a temple or refurbishing a temple. So there's it's a completely mundane if you don't know what you're looking at, but it shows all of these budget line items for these renovations that they're doing to a temple. And one of the items there is a single rug for $17,000.
Yep.
You ask the ACLU, do you guys have a rug in your lobby that's worth $17,000? Could you yeah. sell a rug and buy a brand new Honda Civic with any of the assets that you have inside of your lobby area? No, that's yeah. absolutely absurd. But the church has over 100 of these temples that they have spent millions and tens of millions of dollars on. So what we're talking about is just apples and oranges when it comes to the church compared to the ACLU or the FFRF. And unfortunately, these small liberty unions like the ACLU are always having to punch up at these massive churches that have incredible political and monetary power that they can just distribute their lobbying and legal efforts wherever they want. Whereas, like, you know, you have the FFRF trying to fight against hundreds or thousands of religions that are constantly pumping money into the system, and it's one little tiny organization. I mean, it's not long before you just look at it logistically and say, it's a losing battle.
Yeah. But yeah,
well, it depends on how you fight it too. You're talking about how the methods that they go through and everything else are like punching up. See, I think they need to approach it from the backside and hamstring the bastards.
I'm totally open. Efficient. Yeah, I'm open to that tech. I am open to that. What is that mechanism? What does that look like?
I would need a CPA.
Okay, but no, there has to be some kind of like a high-minded way to actually do this. There has to be
one of the ways kind of is to actually turn their tactics against them. And this goes for not just Mormons. This goes for all wannabe theocracy implementers. They're constantly getting their people into positions of power and authority that allow them to successfully lobby to have certain bills passed, things like that, to get the way they want. So what we need to do is we really need to get people that are very familiar with Mormonism or Roman Catholicism and so evangelicals, the whole nine yards, get them into their systems, work their way up to decision systems, into the decision-making seats, highly populate them, and then crash the system around them. Think about it. We've said it before. You haven't been here for that, but we've said it before on the show multiple times. With the knowledge that those of us here have just of the Bible, if we wanted to, we could create our own church and rob people blind. Because we have that knowledge. Uh-oh.
I think to get rid of it, all it would take is a couple generations of non-indoctrination and or critical thought education.
I can't hear.
I want to explore this because this is something that fascinates me, and I'm open-minded to being convinced, but I'm not convinced right now because what it sounds like you're talking about is fighting a massive set or a map orchestrated number of disconnected religions and, you know, organizational efforts and committees and, you know, lobbyists who have deeply held religious beliefs by creating a conspiracy sound like it has a high chance of success.
How many? How many of the religious people have gotten into positions of authority and said, oh, yeah, fine, you know, I'll take the oath of doing thing, you know, secular laws, separate church and state and everything else. And then what do they go and do? They don't. They operate as if the church was the authority maker for the state. They allow their religion to drive what their decisions are rather than listening to the people and so forth. Turnabout's fair play in that respect, in my opinion.
Okay, it's fair. So what is exactly – so create this hypothetical conversation for me. What does it look like when you're talking to a lowly – you know the lowliest church member that you're trying to infiltrate? What does a conversation with them look like in order to convince them to do what you want them to do?
No. You're thinking of trying to convert a church member against the church. I'm talking about getting people who are like – atheists, anti-theists, recovering from religious whatever, who are fed up with what their church has done or what their religion has done, to go back, say, oh, yeah, I was wrong, you know, whatever, or not even admit that they were wrong, you know, maybe go to a different one and get in there and start working their way into the positions where they're working with the books and the numbers and the money and everything else. And then they're working with, oh, well, we need to make a policy decision for our expansion here. We need to see which politicians we support here, and just start building the way up through their governmental system, you know, their religious governmental systems, their internal politics, and then ultimately crash that sucker to the ground.
I can't see how this actually works out in theory. Like, it sounds good. It sounds cool. Like, I think that it's a great idea.
It's the same thing that companies have done to other companies.
But I don't see how it actually...
Well, it's like corporate espionage, you know, companies sending other employees, temporarily firing them so they're no longer employed, sending them off to their competition, letting them work up through their competition, let them get insightful information, whether it's on budgets or contract negotiations or whatever, and that person then voluntarily quits and comes back to the other company and releases that information to them. So if you're talking about like an evangelical group...
Wait, Tech, let him talk.
Go ahead. Sorry.
But at no point the religions become wise to this conspiracy? I find that baffling because, I mean, like, let's say you have to enact this somehow, and you would do that through social media campaigns. The church, we are well aware that the Mormon church creates accounts and spies on, or, you know, spends time on the ex-Mormon subreddit. It's not spying if it's open social media. See what the opposition, quote unquote, is saying about them. So there's no way you can orchestrate something like this without the religion detecting this and thus inoculating their members from this.
You can do it in plain sight, just like they do in the other way around. Because what happens is let's say I were to do it. Okay. And they said, we recently heard that you were an atheist. It's like, all right, you found me out. I used to be an atheist, but I made a mistake, and I found Jesus, and he filled me with his light, and I am just so grateful. I had to give back to right all the wrongs I did. They eat that crap up. Look at how many pedophiles they have forgiven. Man. Because the pedophile says, I'm truly sorry. I was wrong. Please forgive me. And then they're put back into a position where they can do it again. And they do it again. And they're forgiven again. And they do it again. And they're forgiven again.
Well,
Achilles' heel is that they are willing to forgive if you tell them you believe.
Okay. All right. I got it. Hold on a second. Yeah, hold on. Playing devil's advocate for a second. Forgive me. Oh. Well, shit. Heretic woman, that thunder and whatnot is over in my neck of the woods too, apparently. Okay, so we'll see what I have UPS running, so if anything goes bad, I can close the show. just in
case. I have a new UPS that's downstairs and not plugged into this machine yet.
That doesn't do you jack shit right now. Okay, so no, blank devil's advocate for a second. What you're describing, Tech, is what we kind of mentioned early in the show, which was Project Snow White, which is what the Church of Scientology did to the U.S. government. That got detected. And that was the early 70s. Trying to organize something like what you're describing, could it work in this day and age? And I'm with Bryce on this one. That would take an incredible amount of clandestine ability that in the current data age, you as an IT guy. Did you guys see that in my back windows?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's not good. Okay, we'll see how this plays out in another couple of minutes.
Nature.
Yeah.
The short version is you could always help keep the clandestine group secret by making a group that is secret but easily detectable enough that they think they got the right group when they're actually going after the wrong group. Designated decoy.
Well, this all sounds like great fun, but...
Here's the thing. Okay, the group that would actually be going into this is not going to be publicly called out. These are going to be people who would have to, for whoever starts this thing, they would have to be hand-selected. They have to be picked, slowly but surely spread out, networked. And it would have to be done offline. The online group, like I said, would basically be the designated decoy. So when the churches and temples and synagogues and everybody else all think that they're making headway, they have no idea that the other group is still in play.
It sounds like it would make a great movie.
Okay. I don't think you guys quite get the amount of involvement required to be a good Mormon. For instance, want to get a good idea of this, a friend of our show, Mike Norton, who also goes by new name Noah, and Bryce knows him as well. He's an ex-Mormon, but he's the guy who managed to get into the temples and film all the quote sacred/secret ceremonies and whatnot. To do that the last time around, he actually assumed a different identity and infiltrated a ward of the Mormon Church and went back. Now, he was born a Mormon, so he knew what to do. He already had the background, so he was able to go in and assume being a faithful Mormon for, I think it was 4 months. And he said, like, by the time he was done, and he wasn't sure how long he was going to do it, he was just going to do it long enough to get the footage and that he wanted to get. He said, I just recently watched an interview where he talked about his experience in more depth. And he was saying that he felt like he was, like he had multiple personalities or something, because the amount of energy and dedication that it took for him to play the role of that faithful Mormon just got to a ridiculous level by the time he quit and went back to his own life. And this is somebody that knew what he was getting into and knew how to act. Like, he didn't have to learn much of anything because he grew up in it.
That's why I see any scenario targeting the already indoctrinated. I think that's a bit, it's not very feasible.
Yeah.
Well, you guys asked how to hamstring or, stick a dagger up the sternum.
Yeah.
This is just a single concept. Whether it can be implemented long-term, large-scale, short-term, small-scale, whatever, it's just a concept idea. Okay, mm-hmm. I never said that I have the plan and I know how to make it work 100% and I can guarantee results. I could definitely go into a church and guarantee results, work my way up, and probably cripple a single church, but just a single church, and only if there was something there to cripple. Yeah. There's a church over here by me. Yeah, I saw that too. that has an excellent reputation for helping people. You're hungry. Come in. We will make you something to eat right now. You know, and yeah, they do the prayer and everything else, but you don't have to say the prayer if you want to eat. Here's the food. Eat. That's commendable in my book. Not forcing somebody to sit there and wait. Feed them now. They can always listen to a song or psalm or something later on. They do get-togethers. They do clothing fundraisers, and they go out and they actually give them to the people. I've seen the church. Yeah. It is run down. They do not keep the money for themselves. Okay? Mm-hmm. That's not a church I would try to infiltrate. Now, one where they've just dropped $10 million of taxpayer money to install a surround sound system and all that, oh, yeah, I'd have a field day going through their numbers.
That may be so. I'm sorry. Go right ahead.
I want to ask, so Tech, the way that I am interested in seeing churches being crippled, whether it's at a small scale or a multinational worldwide religion like the Mormon Church, I am very interested in what is effective in doing that. But it sounds like, just judging on what you had said, requires a certain level of dishonesty in order to infiltrate the ranks that on a personal level I'm not comfortable with, because if anybody hasn't seen this documentary, I highly recommend it. It's called Sri Kumare. Sri is like SRI, like a guru, right? Yes. And it's this guy who's a Vice News reporter now, who went undercover basically for a year and claimed that he was an Indian guru, and he built up a following of people, and he was, you know, documenting everything as he was going along, saying that in a year's time I'm going to reveal myself to them. And basically, when the time finally came, he was so torn because he had created this following that so thoroughly believed in what he was saying. They understood his lies to be divine truths, transcending all time and space, delivered from the great power on high. And he had to come out and tell all of them face to face, I'm full of shit. I was pulling the wool over everybody's eyes. I was lying to you. And after he did that, still believed in him.
Still believed him.
Believed him, yes.
But one thing about that, though,
a name for that. It's where they're so far into being duped, their psyche doesn't want to acknowledge they've been duped for that long.
Okay.
But I have a total different takeaway from that movie, actually. Because
hang on. Let me let you get to that, Heretic. I got to wrap my point together. Yep. So the point that I want to get to is you're using dishonesty in order to change the minds of credulous people from one dishonesty to another dishonesty. Where does that stop? How do you go about saying, okay, actually, this was all a lie. I've actually taken down enough religions now. I've taken down five major world religions by this point, and I'm comfortable with what I've done. How do you unavail yourself of all of the lying that you have done in order to create and infiltrate in order to bring those churches down in the first place? I don't see any long-term mechanism that this actually worked legitimately.
Well, the targets that I had in mind when I was talking about the concept here were not that little rundown church down the street from me, because they're obviously not keeping the money for themselves. They don't spend it on themselves. The guy, the priest that's there or whatever he is, he's got a little rundown car. You know, he lives in a little tiny house nearby. He does not live the life of a millionaire. I'm talking about going after the financial records of where the money is being used corrupt purposes,
like Joel Osteen and Creflo Dollar and those kinds of idiots.
Right. And then you've got the guys who are spending money on huge amounts of money on suits that they don't need, or they're spending money on diamonds mines. I'm looking at you, P Robes, and that sort of shit.
But
and going after the corruption that actually harms the people. I'm not talking about bringing down the religion based on the religion. I'm talking about the people who are within the religion using their church to do really corrupt things, bribing officials, that sort of shit, getting the records and the documents and building up all those things and getting them together and then hitting them hard in a big ass blow. And that's the kind of thing that I was talking about, cutting somebody off at the hamstringing them. It's not going to get rid of religion, but what it is going to do is it's going to put a horrible, horrible dent in their skull in terms of, wow, I've been supporting this guy and this is what they've been doing all these years and I've been part of this. And yeah, they'll probably go, oh, Jesus, forgive me. But in the meantime, taking out a whole bunch of the corrupt at the same time, making it so big that it can't be ignored anymore.
So, guys, I hate to do this. I've got power line issues that are happening right now. Even though I've got regular power, my UPS is actually silently draining.
Going on and off.
Yes, because I've got voltage. Yeah, you can
see brownouts.
I got spikes and dips that are happening right now. Yeah. My UPS right now says that I have approximately 3 minutes of reserve. Please forgive me.
Deb, I'm sorry I cut you off. I'm so sorry. Invite me on. We'll talk about it.
Absolutely. Everybody, please forgive me. I have to wrap because I don't have too much of a choice. Bryce. But
the power's still on at your place.
The power is on, but my UPS says I have 3 minutes of reserve at this point because it's keeping the voltage in a safe zone so it doesn't blow out my power supply.
That fluctuates.
Yes, and it's still draining. That's my point. Yeah, in other words, he's got time.
He does have power right now, but he's not getting the power that he should.
And yes, so he's got to wrap.
If it gets too low, he's going to have a blackout.
Right, and once the UPS is gone, I'm done. As a matter of fact, since I told you about this, I just went from 34% down to 30% power left in the UPS. I unfortunately am going to wrap because I don't have a choice. Everybody, thank you very much for being with us. I'm so sorry that I got to do this, but Bryce Blankenagel, I have all of your information over in the show notes, but please, by all means, go ahead and tell everybody who you and where to find you.
Yeah, Twitter and Fake at Naked Mormonism are your favorite podcasting app of choice, Naked Mormonism. And thank you, everybody, for having me on. It's really been a lot of fun talking tonight.
Yes. So let me just wrap up really quickly. Unrenowned Tech, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks. And again, like I said, it was just a concept. It's not something that would definitely...
Shap!
What?
Joey, thank you very much for your time. You have a good morning.
Well, you guys too.
Joseph, thank you for your time.
Well, you too, sir.
Heretic Woman, sorry, can't go through everything, but thank you for your time, hon.
Yeah, Monday night, 7:30 p.m. Eastern.
Bridget, thank you also.
See you in 2 weeks.
Okay, and everybody that's watching, again, I'm so sorry, but you have yourselves a safe time. As always, I wish you the peace that I longer have. I wish you the strength that I've learned. I wish you well, my lady. 12 plus years on, I'm still in love. Take care, everybody. We'll see you again next week. Until that point, thank you very much. I'm sorry, and good night.
You've been listening to Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. Feel free to leave a comment on the show's website at holycrapthevlogcast.com, where you'll also find links to our Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Google Plus pages. Theme music provided by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. On behalf of all of us here, thank you for listening.